So as you can tell, in the summer, we at Genesis Church like to have a little bit of fun. Creative meeting gets a little goofy at times, but we are actually using Star Trek The Next Generation to theme out our next sermon series. We are starting a new one. We just finished Proverbs. We got to look at the wisdom of the Bible in the Proverbs and how it applies to different scenarios today. I look really goofy with these glasses on. But how that applies today. And is there a cross in that U, by the way? There is. Look at that. Does anyone see that? It's amazing. And so we are shifting gears. We're moving from Proverbs to the next generation. Genesis Church, the next generation. And to kind of give you an idea of why we chose Star Trek, The Next Generation, very popular series in the 90s. Jean-Luc Picard. We got to see a lot of different aliens. It's just kind of a goofy thing. I'm more of a Star Wars guy, but it wasn't that big of a transition for me, being like an ultra nerd, to kind of geek out and learn about the next generation. But to give you an idea of what Star Trek: The Next Generation is, some of the movies that have come out recently are from Captain Kirk, is that right? Captain Kirk? And so you've got the original Star Trek, and they're out exploring worlds, and they've got this constant battle with an alien race called the Klingons, and so they're battling, and they're trying to explore new worlds. They've got all this space, fantasy, sci-fi themes and adventures, and so what happens is 70 years after their last mission, there is Star Trek: The Next Generation. And as you heard in the intro, the Genesis Church and Eureka was kind of put in there with an automated voice, but what originally they're doing in this TV show is to explore new worlds. They've had a time of peace with the Klingons, this alien race that they were warring against. That battle has now ceased. There's new enemies out there. There's the Borg. There's the Romulans. Anybody? Nobody's? Okay. Did I lose everybody? But they have these new battles. There's new forces, new enemies. There's also new worlds to explore. There's new adventures to be had. And so the next generation is going to push even further than the first generation did. And that's what Star Trek: The Next Generation is about. Well, we're looking at Joshua. Now, I'm going to draw this connection between these people here on the screen. There's Worf. He was a Klingon. He's got that weird wrinkle thing. And Geordi's the blind guy, reading rainbow guy, is there. So we're going to draw a connection from these guys to Joshua. Okay, and we're looking at the end of Joshua, Joshua 23 and 24, and we're looking at these people who are much like Star Trek. They are preparing for the next generation to come and push the mission further, where they're waiting for the next group of people to rise up and extend their mission to continue doing God's will in their area, continue doing God's will in their city, in their land, and continue to push the mission further, continue to explore new ways of how they can seek out God's rule and dominion in the land. And so there are some similarities here, but to give you a background, in case you're not aware of who Joshua is or who is this character, basically I want to start you off with Charlton Heston as Moses, okay? So think of Moses. There was Prince of Egypt, was a movie that also came out. I think they're even coming out with another Moses movie here pretty soon. I forget who plays him. It's going to be kind of in line with Noah, so it's like not accurate at all, but it'll be fun to watch. It'll be good effects. But that Moses character, the guy who led the Israelites out of Egypt, the Israelites were this group of people who God had promised to one day raise them up to be a nation, raise them up to be a mighty nation that would have their own place, that would have their own kingdom, and God would be their people and they would be God's people. Or God would be their God and they would be his people. Like, there's this relationship that they were going to have, and it was going to involve having their own land, having their own kingdom underneath God. But they're enslaved to the Egyptians. They're working for them. They don't have their own nation. They're not able to make their own decisions. They're not even really able to worship their own God in the way that they're called to. So Moses is the guy that God used to lead this group of people out of Egypt. And Moses takes these people out of Egypt. They get set free. We have the parting of the Red Seas. They walk through this this big body of water that was in their way to get to the Promised Land. And so they go through the Red Sea, and they're on the doorstep of the Promised Land. And what do? For 40 years, they wander in a wilderness. They wander in a desert, and they can't find where they need to go. And God does not allow them to enter into this special land that he's been preparing them, because he's letting the older generation die out and waiting for a newer generation that trusts in the Lord fully, that is ready to go to battle for the Lord. And so he waits for that generation to pass, and a new generation arises. And they, with the death of Moses, they go into the Promised Land. Now, at this time, they have a big obstacle ahead of them. They have to, one, they've got people in their way. They've got a lot of nations. Most of Joshua is talking about how they're clearing a path for them to get to the land, because there are nations and people groups in their way. If you have any questions about some of the bloody scenes of the Bible, this is one of the books that you're going to really struggle with. They're like, man, why would God call people to just annihilate these people who are living here? I'm going to address that real briefly. I can't get into it completely because we're not dealing with all of Joshua. We're just dealing with the last two chapters. But briefly, if that's a question of why would God cause these people to go in and storm the gates on these just peaceful, nice, fun-loving people that were already living there? And the truth is that the people who were already living there were pretty wicked. Some of the wickedness that they had surpasses what most nations of what we would see today. Certainly surpasses the rule and reign and sort of tight knit confines of say like a regime like China or North Korea. It far surpasses those. These people had child sacrifice on the regular. I mean, that was something that was just a part of their culture, was child sacrifice. You know, for most Christians, we get upset and have a rallying cry around abortion. This wasn't even abortion. I mean, they were sacrificing children to their God, to appease their God. And so these are the type of groups that were in the way. And a real big picture question is that the main thing that you need to know is that the reason why God led his forces through these people, through these other nations, through battle and conflict, is that these other nations, these other groups of people, these other tribes, that they were standing in between God's ultimate purpose and Israel. And God was going to move Israel into this land to bring about Jesus, to bring about the Savior of the world. And so nothing was going to stand in God's way. Not a person, not a people group. God was going to move forward with his mission. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we open the text. That's just kind of a real big picture question to answer that, you know, briefly. Certainly love to talk about that later on. But that is sort of what's happening as they march through this initial promise land generation. Phase one, they march through the promised land. And as we're about to find out, they have a time of peace where they actually settle in the land that God had promised. They have arrived. They've made it to their destination. But the mission's not over. There's still something left to be done. There's still some of these other nations are surrounding them. There's still some conflict around them. There's still a need to push the boundaries just a little bit more. They've just arrived. They've just completed phase one, but they have not fully completed the mission of God. And so Joshua is old and dying, and he says he's calling to the Israelites, this group of people that he's been had the privilege of leading under God's command and under God's leadership. He's led these people into the Promised Land, and now it's time for them to complete the mission, for them to finish the fight, for them to go from phase one to phase two. It's time for the next generation to rise up and continue the mission of God. And so that's what we see in Joshua. Let's see what him preparing for. And I see a lot of similarities between the ending of Joshua and where we are at as a church. That this is Genesis Church, the next generation. And somebody's like, well, you know, why not pick a 10-year anniversary, or why not pick a 15-year? Well, you know, we've only been around for 8 years. It's not even an anniversary. Our anniversary kind of fits in Easter. But what is it about this time that makes us think about the next generation, pushing the boundaries to the next stage? Are we in a transition stage. And I think we are. I think if you look at this church from, now I've been coming here for about 5 years. Church has been around for eight. And so I've been coming here for about 5 years, and I remember seeing a much different scenario back here when I first started coming than the band that we have now. The talented musicians, guys who don't smell and they like to take showers. We didn't always have that. That wasn't always on the premium. We've definitely have guys who are more mature in their faith and just older. When we first started coming, it was me and a lot of friends that were in this band. A lot of younger, 25-year-old, some even 22-year-old, just out of college, just around college age. The type of music wasn't necessarily the type of music that we had today. We played a lot more dark and brooding. It was the Twilight era, the brooding was in. And so we had a lot of that in our music. And the music style has changed. We have developed, and I'm not saying one was better than the other, but I'm saying we have changed. The group of people that we have in our audience has changed. A lot of the people that helped build this church and help establish the rhythms that we have and just the groundbreaking elements of figuring out how can we have a service in this space, how can we meet in Eureka High School and actually make it function. A lot of the guys that established that and figured that out, a lot of them have grown up. They've left and gone off for school or have gotten married and have left. And so we've had some transition from the initial groundbreaking people that were a part of this church. But with that, we've also had a lot of new faces come in the last couple years. We've had a lot of newer people, and it's starting to have this sense of change. For me personally, I'm going through a life of change. This might speak to me more than it speaks to you, but definitely as I'm looking at starting a new church in the city, which we've talked about a lot over the last year, as we get closer and closer to what does it look like for Genesis to send me and my family out into the city to share the gospel, to advance the mission, that there will be a change in the eldership. That I serve on an eldership team of five other guys. There's five guys, and I'm one of them, and I'll be leaving. Also, and the Allens have talked about it, that they're looking at Leon Allen, one of the elders, is looking at moving at some point in time back to his home state. And so we see transition, leadership in the body, we see transition in the band. We are in a time of transition where we don't look the same as we originally did. And with that, as we've grown, as we've gone from a group of 60 to 80 to 100, most Sunday mornings we're averaging about 120. As we've grown bigger, our mission capability has grown as well. That we have the ability now to push the mission further. We have the ability to do things now that we never could have done 5 years ago. And we'll talk about some of those great things that God has done. So this is the sermon series that we're looking at, is Genesis Church, the next generation. What does it mean for us now who are in this room to push the mission of Genesis Church further, one step further, to push the boundaries, to find new areas in Eureka? We're not searching the stars for new worlds, but we are searching Eureka for new areas. We are searching Eureka's neighborhoods. Where are their developments? Where are their young kids that are going? We do kids clubs all the time. Where can we push the mission of God? Where can we share the love of Jesus in Eureka that we have yet to do? And so we're pushing that next step. Genesis Church, the next generation, is what we're looking at. So to do that, I want to look at Joshua 23, verses 1 through 5 today. We're going to be looking at the last two chapters of Joshua. The Bible's on the end of your row. You can find that on page 170. And what we're going to do is we're going to look at the final chapters. This is Joshua. He's older. He's no longer able to lead the mission, but he's done a good job. He's done a faithful job. That Joshua, by and large, is a very positive book. It's a book that inspires a lot of hope for the future, that we see that this group of people under Joshua's lead they've conquered, they've done their mission, they've obeyed God, and now it's time to pass the torch. Now it's time to call on the readers of this book, to call on the next generation to continue to advance God's mission. And we see here in Joshua 23, we see him calling everyone together. It says in Joshua 23, verse 1, "A long time afterward, when the Lord had given rest to Israel from all of their surrounding enemies," this is a time of peace, "and Joshua was old and well advanced in years, Joshua summoned all of Israel, its elders and heads, its judges and officers, and said to them, I am now old and well advanced in years. So if, in case you missed it, this dude is old, okay? He is knocking on death's doorsteps, and he wants to deliver a final message. This might be the last message he gets to tell Israel as Israel's leader. And he wants to give like a farewell address. My time is not going to be here. I'm not going to be able to lead you. I'm not going to be able to point you to God further. I need you to tell you one more thing. And you have seen all that the Lord your God has done to all these nations for your sake. For it is the Lord your God who has fought for you. As this is where we get, he's reminding them, remember the path that we took to get here? Remember how it wasn't you that fought, but it was God that fought for you? Remember the obstacles you overcame? Now, some of you are saying, well, I'm not very familiar with Joshua. Well, let me kind of give you some of the scenes, the recap of the fight scenes that take place in Joshua. There's some very interesting ones. The path of Israel that they took, when Joshua says, it's the Lord that fought for you, I mean, it's because literally there are battles where the Israelites didn't lift a finger. Okay, there's a famous one where the battle plan comes down like this. And he says, okay, so Joshua, you're telling me that what you want to do is instead of grabbing as many guys as we can, and instead of getting as many swords and armor, instead of loading up the battle, you want us to grab our trumpets and trombones. That's what you're telling me to do? Oh, and the tuba? Really? Okay, so you want us to, our battle plan is to be a band nerd and march around a city until what? And so they do this, and what happens? God crumbles the city, the people fight amongst themselves, and these Israelites, there's so many instances where God does the fighting for them, where they are just observers and they're participating with God, but they are not exerting themselves at most times. They're benefactors of the Lord's work that the Lord is doing. So when Joshua says, man, it is God who has fought for you. It is God who has brought you to this place. It's not on your own efforts. If it was by our own efforts, we would have been dead at the doorstep of this land. But God has delivered us through these battles, and he has fought these enemies. He has pushed a way for us to settle here in this land that he has brought us to. And he says, remember, that is for the Lord your God who has fought for you. Behold, I have allotted to you as an inheritance for your tribes those nations that remain, along with all the nations that I have already cut off from the Jordan to the great sea in the west. So he's saying this huge mass of land that God didn't just fight these enemies, but he gave us this land. The Lord your God will push them back before you and drive them out of your sight, and you shall possess their land, just as the Lord your God promised you. So they're still there. God has made a way, made a spot for these people to rest and have rest from their enemies, but there's still a need to further push back. And as we get down the line in the series, we'll examine what that looks like. There are certain idols and practices that these other nations have that there's a strong warning, do not adopt their way of life. Don't sacrifice your children to idols. Don't live life like they do. Don't serve their gods. Don't follow their religion. Stay true to your God. Stay true to the God that has delivered you to this point. And so there's still this need to further push back, to further go the next step and advance the mission of God. And so what we're going to talk about today is celebrating these victories. That Joshua starts his speech off in this transition time period of leadership change and new faces and new bodies for the mission, that there is a call to remember the victories. He reminds them, remember what God did for you. Remember how he fought this nation, and you didn't. I mean, it was the craziest circumstances where you just had to play a trumpet. Like, remember what happened, that God led you through this. And so we find that, first and foremost, that we need to celebrate victories because the Lord gives victories. That Joshua is telling his people that man, remember this, celebrate this, be joyful because it's because the Lord gave you this victory. It wasn't on your own sweat and tears and blood. It was the Lord's effort that brought you here. Now, I remember growing up in sports, team sports, and I had a lot of people tell me, Weston, there is no I in team, okay? And that made sense to me because I could spell at the time. And so I understood the concept, there's no I in team. And they're saying, okay, you can't be a ball hog, you can't be the guy to win the whole game. But then I started watching pro sports, and I realized there is an I in victory, win, accomplishment, achievement, triumph. Yes, there is I in a lot of these words. Meddling, I don't know, does suffixes count? I don't know, maybe that's too much. But the point is that yes, there is an I in win, okay? The question is, who is the I? Okay, in your life, when you look at your victories and you look back, as Israel could have looked back and said, we did that. Hey, do you remember that battle? That battle, how we as a people, we accomplished that? And so who is the I in your victories? When you look back on your life and you say, man, I'm a good person. I don't do these negative things that other people do. I had a conversation with a guy who, he's a friend of mine, and he had no concept that like a stripper lap dance would be anything worth worrying about, you know. That's just his mind. And so I could look at him and say, "Man, you are so far gone that if you think that's even remotely acceptable, that's crazy. You must be a dirty heathen." And I am self-righteous. I for the win, right? And so I could very easily turn my moral victories into that. Look at how good and pious I am. I'm trying to use as many words with I in them. But I could look at that, couldn't I? And I could look at myself and build myself up. But Joshua is calling his people to remember that the I in win is not you. The I in win is God. That the I in the win is the I am, the one who shoulders the burden, the one who fights for us, the one who leads the way, who carries us along. That there is an I in win, and his name is Emmanuel. I know it starts with an E. But there is an I in win. And we look to God and we say, you are the reason why we have this victory. You are the reason why I've been brought along out of the mud. I've been brought out of slavery. You're the reason why my enemies have been pushed back. That the forces in front of me, when I look to extend the mission of God, when I look to serve God, that it's not on my own doing, it's not on my own power, but it is God that fights for me. It is God who is the I and win. And so he says, man, remember that. Remember that God is the one who gives the victories. Secondly, he says, man, the Lord gives celebrations. That the Lord gives times of rest and times to reflect. He says in verse 1, a long time afterward, when the Lord had given rest to Israel. That Israel was able to have a season of life, even though the mission was not complete. They crossed that first hurdle, and God said, okay, let's have a time of rest. I'm going to give you a time of rest where the people or the enemies around you that want you destroyed, that want to stop you, that want to drive you back to Egypt, that those enemies will be afraid for a moment, and they'll step away and they'll step back and they won't pursue your death, and I will give you a time of rest. You've been faithful to the covenant, you've been faithful to the promises that I've given you, and you've walked in line with what I've said, and so I'm going to give you rest. And the Lord gives, and I remember growing up, I used to think church was, you've heard the joke, you know, you can go to heaven or you can go to hell where all the fun people will be. And that this kind of that people look at church that way, that you've got all these just really stiff, stoic, stodgy, just sort of like, man, robotic people in the church. And that, you know, the church is people of no fun. And, you know, I used to think, I grew up in a Southern Baptist church. SBC for short, and I thought forever that the SBC meant these are things we don't do, smoking, booze, or chewing, and that this is what we were against. And that's all I knew of the SBC is what we don't do. That's all I knew of my SBC church. That's all I knew of a Southern Baptist church is we are defined by who we are not. We are defined by what we don't do. We don't like these things, and we're just going to get a bunch of rules of what not to do, and we'll follow the rules. I remember playing cards in the church office, and we were playing with these playing cards, you know, numbers 1 through, 10, and there's a king and a jack and a queen and an ace, and apparently those are evil. Did you know that? Apparently the numbers 1 through 9 in four different colors with different symbols is evil. Or through 10. But that's evil, you know, and that we can't play that in the church office. Don't you know what those cards are associated with? Go fish. That's what we were playing. I don't know. But that's all I knew growing up, that people perceived the church as being a place of do's and don'ts. People perceived it, but what we didn't perceive the church of growing up was that's a place where we go to have fun. I mean, think about your church background. For those of you who have a church background, think about it. Growing up, did you think of the church as a place of, that's where I go to celebrate. And that's where I go to be happy and to have fun and to have enjoyment and to have what is being called rest. That when I come into the presence of God, when I come into the assembly of God's people, that there is just burdens that fall off my shoulders. That there is a rest and a joy and a peace inside my soul. And some of us may not have backgrounds like that. Some of us who were from outside the church, maybe you viewed the church that way. But what Joshua is reminding his people is that God is a God of rest. God is a God of celebrations. And you look through the Old Testament, you see it all the time. In Jesus' lineage, his story is that that there was this big party way back when, you know, Jesus is like great, 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 you know, I don't know how many times, but we're talking about Boaz and Ruth, and Boaz and Ruth are in the ancestry of Jesus, and their story is, hey, we had this big party, and everyone was having a party, having fun, because we raised these crops, and we gathered them, and now we're just going to have fun. And at the end of this party, they all just kind of sleep in the barn, which I would find itchy, but they just fall asleep in the barn, and this woman falls asleep, cuddled up to his feet. And I don't know, Boaz, I would think the foot fetish thing would be kind of weird, but Boaz was pretty chill about it, and he just went rolled with the punches. And so they ended up marrying and are in the line of Jesus from a party. There's a celebration that God's people had, that Jesus' ancestors had of, man, we are going to celebrate this harvesting of the grain. There's some other celebrations you see. You see the Passover. They remember when God led them out of Egypt. And we're going to have a meal every year to celebrate and be thankful. Even in the New Testament, we see celebrations all the time. Jesus' first miracle was where? A wedding, right? He's showing up at a celebration, and there's a mass of people, and he performs a miracle. And they're happy, they're excited that this is part of Jesus' life was to have meals with people and to hang out with people. And he even instituted this into our religion, into Christianity. He instituted this by saying, hey, I want you to have a meal as often as you meet. When you guys meet together, make it often, make it happen a lot, because I want you to remember my death for you. I want you to remember that this bread, when we take communion, we come forward and we have bread and grape juice. When we have these things, like that, we're supposed to remember what Jesus did on the cross. Now, that would not be a party if Jesus stayed dead in the tomb. But because Jesus rose from the grave and conquered death, hell, and the grave, we can look at communion, we can look at this meal that we have regularly and say, this is a celebration. This is a celebration of the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And so church should be a place of celebration. It should be a place of fun and sometimes even a party atmosphere where we can throw off the burdens and we throw off the cares of the world and say, man, I am glad to be in Jesus and hanging out with my fellow Christians and hanging out with the people who love God. That should make me happy. That should make me joyful. That should be a party atmosphere. And I hope and pray that's what Genesis will be. That's what we're striving and looking for. And so Joshua says, man, remember, God is the one who gave you this victory. God is the one who gave you this rest, and so you could celebrate the victory. But also, God is preparing. Now, we need to celebrate these victories now because God is still working. God is still preparing for the next phase, that there will be a next step. This next generation will have to push the mission forward. The mission's not over yet. That there is still something to be accomplished. That there's still something to push out and strive for. And so God is saying, the Lord is preparing, and we'll know that the Lord is, you might say, okay, well, is the Lord still preparing today? You know, they accomplished what they needed to back then. Is the Lord always preparing? When do they know when it stops? How do we know when the mission is complete? And we know when the mission is complete by when we see Genesis 3:15 completely come true. That Genesis 3:15 is when you have we'll take it back to the Adam and Eve in the garden. Okay, so we've got the initial story, this initial very vivid pictures that we see that Moses is writing to his people to tell them of how the world started and who is God and who are we as people. And we see our initial parents, Adam and Eve, that they rebel against God. They say, God, I want to be my own God. I don't want to live as your creation. I want to be the creator. I want to be creator of my own little world. And they separate from God. They bring death and destruction into the world. And God says, I can't leave life like this. I can't leave you on your own. I can't leave you pursuing death and destruction. There will be a day when I send a deliverer who will stamp out the one who brought this curse, who will stamp out Satan, who will defeat death, hell, and the grave. I will accomplish that. And you'll see that in Genesis 3:15, where you see a promised one who will deliver, who will deliver a death blow to death, hell, and the grave. And until that day has come, there is a next step. There is a mission to push forward. So for us today, we don't have the same mission as Joshua. We're not to go take Eureka by force. You won't hear, hopefully not any Christian pastors teach that. I don't think you'll hear, Fred Phelps is dead, so I don't think you'll hear any more, take it by force type of mentality. But if you do, that's not the type of mission. Our mission is different. It looks different. That God is on the same mission of declaring his love to the world, sending his son Jesus to die for the world, and calling all men to repentance. That is the mission of God, to bring reconciliation between all people and him. Okay, so God is on mission for reconciliation. And we see it look differently in Joshua, that for them, that part, that phase, the goal was to get into this land. The goal was to get into this most trafficked land, this land that people would walk through, and because the only way to get from north to south was to go through here. You couldn't climb through the deserts or the crazy sea. And you had to, if you're going to travel by land, where they were being planted was going to be the prime spot for travelers to go through from north to south. Which means God was putting them in a strategic location to show the whole world at that time, to show the whole world God's love. And God did things a little differently with early Israel and Joshua's group, and God does things a little differently with us, that we go and do kids clubs and do mission trips and we do service projects, and that it's the same mission that God is calling us to, is to share with the world around us God's love, to put ourselves in position to witness of Jesus's death, burial, and resurrection, to share what that means for the people who are not here today, what that means for the lost world around us. And so we're on this same mission because the Lord is still preparing. And Joshua lets his people know. He says there is still more to push back the idolatry of the lands around us, that we still have this mission to go forward. And so that's what we see in Joshua's life. I see a lot of overlap here at the end of Joshua's life, leading his people to take on a new cause, to push the boundaries of the mission a little further, to continue in the mission of God. And I see a lot of overlap with us here at Genesis. And as we walk through this book, as we walk through this passage, I want us to not abuse the text. I don't want us to say, well, Joshua said it, and the historical context doesn't matter. I'm just going to rip these words out and apply it to my life. That's not what we're doing. What we're doing is realizing that God is a part of has a bigger story than just our lives. And we're going to learn from what that story looked like, the things that the Lord did to accomplish his mission at this time. We're going to look at what did God do to accomplish his mission in Joshua's life, in Israel's life, in this promised land. And what do we need? How do we need to respond to God's call to be on mission to Eureka? How do we need to respond to pushing the boundaries and the mission further into Eureka? And that's what we'll be looking at. What I'd like to do is we like to have a little bit of a participation in the audience. It's something we try to do. So there are some people who have some noisemakers that I would love for you guys to pass out. Just go up and down the aisles. See, we're all about celebrating here. We want to celebrate the victories. So since you guys are not necessarily the amen crowd, you're gonna blow the noisemakers. So I don't know how this will sound on the recording, but good luck to whoever's tasked with that one. But we're going to celebrate the victories in your life, that God gave his people rest. And I want us today to look back at the past year, specifically this past summer, and look at all of the stuff that we have done, and we have seen God move through us. All of the stuff that God has commissioned us to do, and that we've gone forward in advancing his mission. And now is a time where we can reflect and say, okay, let's celebrate what the Lord has done with this group of people. So when you hear something that you say, that's worth amening about, but I'm Baptist and I don't amen, blow your noisemaker, okay? So I want to talk about what are the personal victories that God has given you. I'd like you to stand up and say them, but before you do that, I'll give you a moment to think about some. But think about what has God done in your life personally, not as a church. Don't think we'll get there next, but not as a church. But what has God done in your life this summer or this year? What's some things that are amazing that you're like, man, this is worth celebrating. This is a great thing, whether promotion at work or the kids are getting better grades and they're not getting in trouble as much, or we've gone past the diaper stage. Whatever it is for you, I want you to give you an opportunity to stand up and say it. We'll do about five of them. I'll give you mine first. For me, it's been amazing. This summer summer's crazy, okay? So June and July are you just throw the dates in the air and you just see where they land, and that's what you're doing that day. And so what we've noticed is in June and July, basically with all the mission trips and the camps and just doing all these things, that family Bible study gets sporadic and gets, you know, just it just kind of goes out the window. And we use the storybook Bible. There should be some out there on the book table. But we use that storybook Bible. This is our second version, and the cover is gone. I mean, we use this thing all the time. And the kids love it. It's great for their age range. And so with sporadic family Bible studies and family devotionals, what I've noticed is this last week, my kids have said, hey, we'd really like to read the storybook Bible again. You know, we haven't been doing that. We've had kids' clubs, we've had mission trips, I've been out of town for a camp. That it's just been crazy, but then my kids are saying, man, we've noticed that we're missing that in our lives. We would like to hear the Bible stories. Let's go find that book that's held together by tape and love, I guess, and let's just read that again. Let's read that storybook Bible. And so that's been a big blessing in my life to see my kids long for their family devotional. That's been something worth... No clapping. Oh, they don't make noises. Well, you can clap and make noises. Okay. Actually, do that. If you just do that, that'll be better for the guys who have to record this. If it made a lot of noise, it'd be terrible. Okay, anybody else? Anyone else want to stand up and say, this is what I've seen this victory in my life, and it's been something worth celebrating? Good. Awesome. Awesome. Bob? Remission from cancer. Awesome. Definitely worth celebrating. Anyone else? Any one more person?
We got to welcome a daughter-in-law into our family.
A daughter-in-law and your family. All right. So there are lots of things that are worth celebrating in our lives that we can look at and say, yes, there's victory, there's something. And in all of these, do we wake up the next day and say, oh, that was cool? What do we do as soon as we find out the news? But what do we do? Bob, what did you do after you found out you had remission cancer? Or hug a lot of people, yeah. What's that? Oh, told a lot of people, yeah. And if it's Bob, I'm assuming you hugged a lot of people too. What about, so daughter-in-law. You don't do anything special for that, do you? There's not like any, you know, multi-thousand dollar Yeah, I spent a lot of money. But you have a big party, don't you? You have this big party to welcome in. What about graduation? I lost you in the lights. Oh, there you are. Okay. Graduation. You're gonna celebrate that, I would assume. You don't know? Where's Rob? Tell Rob. Rob, you have to celebrate. All right. Well, he'll listen to this and recording, and it'll remind him, and he'll get you something good. So there's celebrations that happen when we go through and have these triumphs, have these victories in our lives, and we can thank God, and we can say, God, thank you for this trial. And in all of these issues, there's definitely trials. There's definitely trials and hard work that you need carried through when going to school. Going going back to school and getting the degree that you need for your work. Like, there's study and sweat and hard work that goes involved in that. With cancer, the grueling agony of going through the treatments and the unknown and the doctor's reports and having to wade through all that. That there's a struggle there, and even with a daughter-in-law, to worry about the relationship of your son. And what is that going to look like, and how is that going to work itself out, and so to go through these trials or these issues and to come out on the other end, it's good to just rest. It's good to just breathe and have peace and say, yes, I can celebrate. I can thank God for doing this in my life. And so that's one of the ways that we can celebrate. But as you celebrate individually, which you all, you know, you have a party for the wedding, you know, you have, you tell people about your mission of cancer, and you hug people, and Rob buys you something very nice for your graduation. When you go through that, like, well, now he has to. There's 100 people that are going to say, look, Rob. When we have these things, and we say, yes, I can thank God for this in my life. And that is great, and we all do that personally. But what does that look like when we celebrate as a church? And we can celebrate for each other individually, and we can see the things that God is doing in our lives, but how do we celebrate as a church? What are the things that we get excited about? And this summer, we have a lot to celebrate for. We have a lot to look around what is really a small group of people and look at how God has used us in a mighty way, how God has used us beyond our numbers. We're going to look at that real quick. The church victories. I want to start off by telling you we're not the normal church when it comes to this. For those of you who don't have a church background and this is your first church background, we've totally ruined you because this is not typical church when it comes to mission and service and God's just blessed us and given us people and given us. Given us hearts for his mission. I've talked with Mike. I remember like 3 years ago talking with Mike when we first proposed doing 2 international mission trips, one to Ecuador and one to Haiti. And I said, dude, that is crazy. And he was like, no, that's not that crazy. And it's gonna be cool. It's a great thing for our people. And I'm like, no, that is totally insane. And it is insane. He's just too crazy to realize it. But it's amazing how much mission output this body has. And when you look at the statistics, which I know you don't, but I do, and so I'll inform you of the statistics, that 9% of Americans have ever been on a brief service trip, including 11% of churchgoers. So they're saying only, and this can give or take about 3%. So if you're saying, oh, statistics are weird and they don't work, this one's pretty verified. In fact, at the end of this article, it has how they came up with their statistics and how they gave a margin of error. And so at most, you're going up 3%. But think about that. In the church, of churchgoers, people who have been a part of a short-term mission project, you're talking about 11%. Now think about this. Who here in this congregation has been on a mission trip this summer? That's way more than 11%, okay? That's that abnormal group. Who's been 2 years? Because again, this was ever. 3 years? So, I mean, we've got more than the numbers are bearing out for the average church. We see that only 14% of these trips had parent involvement. And a lot of these trips end up being youth trips. So in the last few years, out of all these trips that have gone on these short, brief mission trips, that these a lot of them are just youth, and so you've got a youth worker, maybe a couple adults, and then you have a ton of youth that go out on these mission trips. Who all was involved in the Charleston mission trip, the Charleston family mission trip? Who went with their family? Yeah, so we've got a good number that went with family, and there's probably some even more out there working with the kids today. This says 14% of these trips. So of these trips that had 11% churchgoers, 14% of those trips had parental involvement. And every year at Genesis, we have a Charleston family mission trip where we encourage families to go for a couple days or the whole week, but go as a family. And then here's another statistic that I found interesting. 2% of Americans are service trip enthusiasts, having been on 5 or more adventures. Okay, so who here has been on at least 5 mission trips in the last 10 years? That's a little more than 2%. So that this small body of committed believers, that God is doing something special through us when it comes to mission, when it comes to being on mission. And we see this when we look at Charleston, and we have in the 80s to 90s that show up to that. Every year, we have a great response. We even bring some people outside of our church that join up on those. When we look at Ecuador, one of the international trips, is this the second year they've gone?
Third
year they've gone, okay. And so this is the third year they've gone on this mission trip. There's a missionary they support that's up there, and they go and help out there. This year we had Eric, the guy who leads music, he went and helped them teach them some worship songs and help work with them on how to play instruments and how to lead worship. We had other people that went. This year they actually went to an unreached people group. And what that means is this is a people group that does not have a gospel presence in their community. And they would hike into the mountains and share the gospel in a kids club type of environment, in a VBS type of environment, where they would share these simple stories with kids and share them, Jesus' love for them. And these were people who in the past had pushed out missionaries. And this year with this group, they allowed them to come in, and the elders of the tribe approved of them and allowed them to operate. And they listened to the stories, an unreached people group, a people group with no gospel presence. This church sent missionaries. Now, of who do we have that went to Ecuador? Okay, good. We've got so pretty much everyone. So we had, I think, was it 6 that went? Yeah, we had 6 people that went. Of those 6, did anybody just basically go all on their own, or did anybody have any help from here at Genesis? Y'all had help. So this church sent, commissioned, provided for 6 missionaries to go overseas to Ecuador to reach with the gospel, with Jesus' love, people who had not heard it. An unreached people group. That happened. Now, is that something worth tweeting about? There you go. If you want to do amen too, I don't want to steal that from you with the little blowers. Kids clubs. We did kids clubs this summer. We had 5 groups that minister to over 40 kids. It's probably closer, somewhere up there in the 50 range total kids. A lot of them were of our church family, but we had a significant portion of that. In most groups, they had 1 or 2 families that were not from this group. So we bring our kids, like at the Burnley's house, the guy who leads worship, we go over there and we do a kids club. I was a part of that, and we brought my kids. He had his kids. And they had a church family that brought their kids. And now they went to another church, but they brought their kids, and it gave us a group that had life and had fun, and there were a couple people who had not been to church, who didn't have a home church, that came to that group. And so those two that we ministered to and gave them a fun environment to hang out for a week, it all opened the opportunity for us to share the gospel to a couple kids' lives that week. The Hubbards, Pastor Hubbard, who teaches and preaches, you probably don't like being called Pastor Hubbard. Is that weird for you? So Mike has one at his house all the time, And they had a big group. They've been doing this consistently over years and have gathered a pretty good-sized group. And it gives our community groups, these groups of people that meet in houses throughout the year, it gives them the opportunity to share Jesus with some kids that have not heard the gospel before or have not heard the gospel regularly. I think that's something we're tweeting about or buzzing about. Man, yeah, tweet has a different meaning now, doesn't it? What are we going to call these? Okay, so Haiti is we just talked about having our last group, our last mission trip. They just came back into town this week. They went to Haiti. Who all is here from Haiti? Who went to Haiti? Not from Haiti, but so we had 22. You have to see a good portion of them here. Who went as a family? This is amazing. Do you see how many hands that went as a family? That's incredible. And so basically, Haiti was a family mission trip, and we sent these families. Who had help from Genesis Church? Was there help from Genesis Church? The financial help, prayer support. We commissioned, we served, and we provided for these families to go into Haiti to love kids that are in an orphanage and to help with the buildings and things like that. So what I want you to do is I want to invite you to watch a slideshow of what Haiti looked like. If you're listening online, when you download this, this will be a time for you to go onto the main page and find the Flickr account, and you can find the same thing there. So let's take a look at this at the slideshow. So you can see in those pictures that there is just an amazing mission output of this church, of what we got to send people to go do, and just to see the joy that they were able to give to these kids. When you looked at the backgrounds of these pictures, you saw a lot of concrete blocks. You saw maybe some wire at the top of those blocks to keep people out. It's a difficult place. It's a hard place. It's an impoverished place. And we were able to send people to one, brighten up their day, give them joy, give them some fun, but also to share the gospel with them. That was more than just to serve them physically. Like all of these trips, all of these kids clubs, all of these things is more than just to celebrate, hey, we made someone's day fun. But that there is an eternal, a big V victory that we can celebrate, that God used us, not just to give them a little V, not just to give them a little victory in having fun, not just to give them a little victory in having a nice time, but to give them a big victory in that they get to hear that Jesus loves them. A big victory that we get to see God's mission move across the world. And so as we look at Joshua this coming August, basically, we'll be in Joshua in August, and we'll be looking at what does it look like to be that next generation, that we are Genesis Church, the next generation. What does it look like to advance the mission, to continue on? And today, this week, I want us to celebrate what God has done recently in our lives and through us, and how we've seen already that God is on mission in us and around us. Take these little blower things home, these party favor things. Take those home, and if you have kids, share them with your kids and say, some point in time this week, hey, we're going to, let's celebrate something that God has done recently in our family's lives. Do that this week. Think about what has God done in our lives that we can celebrate and give it a blow, I guess. So pray with me and thank God with me as we're going to sing. And Lord, we just thank you for all that you've done through Genesis, through this church. It's been an amazing summer. It's been a summer of mission, a summer of fun and service. And we're so thankful that you have chosen this church and these people to bless others and to bless the world around us and here in Eureka and abroad. And Lord, we just pray that you would give us a sense of peace this week and joy, and we want to praise you and thank you so much for all that you have done through us and are going to do through us. In Jesus' name, amen.